Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Thursday, the 17th of March, recording at 8:40 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, first, a quick look at the highlights here today. Asian stock markets were lower following the big sell-off on Wall Street last night, but Asia markets were not significantly lower. One of the bigger drops was the Hang Seng Index. It was down 1.83%. The Nikkei was down 1.44%. Remember, it had been up almost 6 yesterday. And most of the Asian markets had smaller declines. We had quite a good rebound, with the European markets gaining most of their declines that had occurred yesterday, and in some instances a little bit more. Gains of 1.75% to 2.25% were not uncommon, and that includes FTSE up almost 98 points and 1.75%, and the German DAX up 2.2%, one of the better gains. In the Americas, Wall Street closed firm, up 1.34% on the S&P 500 index, the NASDAQ with a smaller gain, 0.73%. Canada was up, Mexico down to the smallest fraction, Brazil up, but a modest gain for Brazil. Long-dated government bond prices eased against the background of that rally. The U.S. 30-year treasuries are down 23/32 as I speak. The U.S. dollar has been soft. The dollar index is back down to 75.95. That's pushed the euro up over 140 again. And sterling is at 161.38. But the Australian dollar is still below parity. It's actually by 2 cents in here. It's at 98. And what else? Commodities. I believe every commodity was higher today. Modest gains, silver to the downside. Modest gains by palladium, platinum, gold 1404, that's up $5.50. And natural gas, a decent push ahead, up to 416. Crude was strong, pushing back up 316, and that's pushed the NYMEX crude back up to 101.55. Everything else in commodities was to the upside. Some big gains in the grain and bean complex, and all of the grain and bean complex. They'd been hit hard recently. We had corn limit up today, and rough rice also limit up today. Okay. So what's going on here overall? Well, it's been a tough time here for stock markets, buffeted by this triple waterfall, or what I of accidents, what I've also referred to as the three black swans. Although I suppose we can't call the first one, which was a moderate spike in the oil price caused by the uprisings in the Middle East, but certainly the Japan earthquake tsunami and the power station serious problems were in the black swan category. Now, the power station news is not good, and it's unfortunately it's been getting a little worse here just about every day. But they're having a lot of problems cooling the three reactors that were active, the three main reactors that were active when the earthquake actually struck. Apparently, dumping water from helicopters was too widely dispersed. It wasn't doing anything. They claim to be having some success with water cannon, but The classification has moved up. And when I commented on this, well, I think Owen's done the last two audios, so it would have been 3 days ago on Monday, that I had said that, and I'd written that this was still classified as a Category 4 nuclear accident. Now, those categories go up tenfold in each grouping. And they range, and they range from 1 to 7. Now, just for perspective, 3 Mile Island was rated as a 5. Chernobyl was rated at the 7, as bad as it gets for these nuclear reactors. Well, this one in Japan is up to a 6 between 3 Mile above 3 Mile Island, but nothing like Chernobyl. And it probably, well, I don't want to play armchair engineer here, but everything that I've seen suggests that it's very unlikely to be anything like Chernobyl. But it's bad. That's the bottom line. And the chances are it's going to take months and months and probably years to deal with this situation. I think that from what we've seen in other accidents, that they get on top of it. They can stop the deterioration and begin to cover the whole thing up. That can be a matter of months, but then it is years of these things gradually cooling and still being highly dangerous and with an exclusion zone before they can ever eventually be opened up and materials carted away, if they do even that. So this is really serious, and therefore I would be careful in terms of what's going to happen in these markets. And just a little background: you remember we had, of course, that wonderful run in stock markets, the Fuller Money Themes, the Asian emerging markets, the Asia Pacific region generally. They started it. They had been leading, and they were really moving upwards very strongly, really from July on into November. And then they became too overextended relative to their MAs and went into corrective phases back to those MAs. And they've been steady in that region subsequently. Now, the US-led Western market contingent broke to the upside, started this rally before breaking to the upside in September. And it was really a strong push right on into January and beyond, back into February for many of these markets before they started to run out of upside momentum and to begin to confirm susceptibility to that inevitable factor, which is the mean reversion correction back towards the 200-day moving average. Well, as that was unfolding, the rest, you know, the spike in the oil price, which certainly shook people, caused what I referred to repeatedly as a moderate spike in the price of crude, but that's certainly a headwind for both stock markets and the global economy that can only pair global GDP growth somewhat. And that situation hasn't been resolved, unfortunately, because we're still having daily problems in Bahrain, as you've seen, and then the civil war continues in Libya, and there are tensions in other states as well. So that's part of the background during this mean reversion reaction. But the well, and then the Japanese situation, which is certainly bearish for sentiment overall, and the risks to the global economy are edging upwards because Japan has power problems, and a number of Japan's key factories that supply components for the rest of the world's and Japan's high-tech products, from smartphones to well, all forms of computers, really. Those plants are largely idle, and therefore that's going to create a problem. Not we don't. Hopefully, that's not going to be more than a few weeks, a month or two, before those plants are up and running once again. But a lot of these companies are really reluctant to restart until they can count on a reliable source of energy, because you can't be switching these high-tech things on and off. They have to be recalibrated each time, and so on. So this is not good, and this will also pare a bit of pare GDP growth down a little bit. And this is what's being reflected here in stock markets overall. I've described it as a very choppy, difficult phase in here. It's certainly proving to be that. And I think we're going to have to contend with this for a while longer, given the factors that I've just reviewed. It's hardly the end of the world, but it's a big corrective phase. Now, statistically, it's not yet on Wall Street. We haven't even seen a pullback of 10%, but there's a risk that it will be a bigger pullback. So we should. I don't want to exaggerate the risk, but equally I don't want to underplay the risk. And the thing is that what I see today tells me that this is still quite a risky environment, because of those three black swans. Now, there's always a silver lining to these things, and to mix metaphors in here, but what I can also say is that the slowdown in GDP growth will reduce those inflationary pressures somewhat, although we still have historically high commodity prices overall, but they've stopped going up, and hopefully that will remain the case for a while. But you know, Fuller Money's view over the last decade has been that we're in a commodity super cycle led by the industrial sector. It's quite possible for weather to create long and significant pullbacks in agricultural commodities, but the weather was pretty lousy over last year's growing seasons, and therefore global supplies are short. So that puts something of a cushion underneath prices until we get better crop yields. And we really have to get into the second half of the year before that can before that can happen. So while I think that the commodity pressures that were, I beg your pardon, the inflationary pressures that were particularly apparent in the stronger growth economies of Asia, those are subsiding somewhat, and the Asian markets have held up tolerably well once they'd actually seen their mean reversion corrections to the MAs, from which they've steadied, as I mentioned earlier. But given the influence of the Wall Street leash effect, we cannot assume that those Asian markets can uncouple and move up just yet. They might, it's not impossible. We saw that last year, from about the May period onwards, but and that was quite unusual. I'd like to see it again this time, but I think it really does depend how much Wall Street weakens in here. And the market, I would be putting the wrong emphasis on it to say that the market will be looking forward to the end of Bernanke's liquidity flooding QE2 program. The right way to say it is that the markets will have to contend with that in June. So that's not that far away. So I think this is an environment again. It's not panic stations, at least not over here. I think the risk is probably limited to an April type correction, you know, that went from April on and well into the autumn months for some stock markets of last year. But that assumes that we don't get another spike up in crude oil. I don't think we will. I don't think we'll take out those highs. But technically, all we can say is that that was a move that became overextended, saw some acceleration, and therefore, as we say, a TCS confirmed an ending of at least of an unspecified duration, but forming a peak of at least near-term significance. And that's where we're left today. And I think events in the Middle East will have to deteriorate further to push the price of oil higher, because it's not going to do it on its own, not even with Japan's some important nuclear reactors down. I mean, Japan has 55 of these, incidentally, so if six of them are offline because of damage and proximity to the damaged units, that's not it's going to cause some additional oil demand coming from Japan, but they'll probably use Ling a little bit more. Just have a little sip of water here for the throat. Excuse me. So, where do we go from here? Well, I think a bit more of the same in terms of the Japan situation. I think, I mean, people have been asking about bargain hunting. Again, I would be careful. I would treat it the way one would attempt to catch a falling knife. You know, you'd be lowering your hand. You'd do it incrementally, very cautiously, and ditto with the nuclear sector. My feeling is that the industry has seen a significant medium-term setback, and I don't expect any of those uranium miners, for instance, to be testing their highs this year. I'd be very surprised if they were actually able to do that. Depending on when you bought this, I noticed, for instance, with Denison Mines, I looked at my statement today, and it was just about all square. I think I was two, you know, just a few hundred pounds ahead on my average cost, having commenced buying it in July. So it's very disappointing to see the big profit melt away. But I'm not of a mind to be selling this out down here. I think these uraniums are a good long-term hold, but there's still some risk here, and they will have to build support, reestablish support levels, get a decent bounce, come back, test it, find support, get some higher lows. If you want to know what the action needs to look like, go back and look at what took place in the fourth quarter of 2008 and the first quarter of 2009 for so many commodities and stock markets during that whole bottoming out and base building period. And that's what nuclear is going to have to do. And it may take longer, as indeed it took longer with some stock markets which were lagging. Therefore, again, from an investment perspective, I certainly wouldn't pay up for anything anywhere. And I think that with something, again, with Japan, which I do think represents some provides some interesting valuations for long-term recovery, the uraniums are back at interesting levels, but I certainly, as I said, repeat the point, it's an important one. I certainly wouldn't pay up. And I think that one can just wait. One doesn't have to do anything in here. Those who want to trade these things, and some do, when they get thumped, that's the time to nibble a little bit and trade it out a day or two later when the bounce occurs. It would be what I would suggest. I'm not tempted to do that myself because the costs are high if I try to do that on spread betting, and I don't want to be hovering over these things that closely, hover over things closely to produce our overall analysis. But my personal trading and investment is very important to me, but it's not my number one priority here in terms of my market work. The service, the service obviously is, and the research effort I put in helps me in my investment portfolio. So it's a virtuous circle. But the point I'm making is I don't want to be peering over these markets, looking at the screen all day long, working out trading moves. I do think that when we get well, let me step back for a moment. Some of you will remember that last year, when things were going so well in the fourth quarter of the year, that I said, "Well, that's great, but this is an atypical period. You just really had to be there in terms of the interesting markets." Fortunately, led by Fullermany Themes, you just had to be there, and one was doing exceptionally well. But whenever markets get a good run like that, it's always going to be followed by a disappointing pullback and choppy activity, whipsaw activity for traders, and a drawdown for investors. And who ride it out. And you may also recall me saying that the time to be lightning in markets was when they were doing very well, as we were seeing in the fourth quarter of last year. That's the best time to be easing out of positions. Not when investors are very nervous and the action's very choppy, as we see in here today. So this is not a time when I would consider reducing my overall long portfolio, but I don't see any reason to go rushing in to other positions as well. Again, you and I can only deal with the reality that market provides, and this is a tricky environment. So we go from several months of outstanding performance opportunity, nice big consistent trends which become overextended, to the pullback and regrouping phase when it's easier to lose money than to make money. But then, in the nature of markets, that pullback and correction and consolidation sets up the environment for another good move to the upside. And I do expect stock markets to be higher before year-end 2011. And I think that the second half of the year will be better than the first half of the year so far in counting. So there we are. And on that note, I'd better not run on too long. So I'll just say, well, I was going to say, this yen situation. Rather masochistically, I allowed my yen short position to be rolled forward. I don't like it. It's been costing me. Technically, it's tricky. But the contradiction in having the economy that's been most damaged recently, also having the world's strongest currency simultaneously, well, that's not sustainable, is it? We can all explain why it's happening in the short term, but it's not sustainable. And I would expect One's learned over the years not to expect too much from the BOJ, but I would expect them on a needs must basis to be a little bit more proactive in this environment right now. And actually, that would be very good news for the Japanese stock market. A weaker yen, when it comes, will be manna from heaven for Japan's exporters. But we're going to have to be a little bit patient before that happens. And on that note, all the best to all of you.